The tributes and discussions about President Jimmy Carter continue after his passing, with his funeral set for January 9th. Now, while the tributes have certainly respected Carter's many accomplishments, well, not all the discussions have. Perhaps this is the consequence of when people place politics over facts and history. My next guest is here to share some insight into the life and work of President Jimmy Carter and lessons that could be learned from all of it. He's a former senior reporter with Time Magazine, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University. Professor Alan Sanders, thank you for being here once again, sir.
My pleasure, Chris. Always a pleasure.
And the website to learn more about the educational opportunities at St. Peter's is stpeters.edu. We have that link at our homepage as well for your easy reference. I found this quote as I was doing some reading about refreshing myself, too, in a lot of ways, about the work of Jimmy Carter. This is something he wrote for his book, Our Endangered Values, from 2005. Fundamentalists have become increasingly influential, and both religion and government have managed to change the nuances and subtleties of historic debate into black and white rigidities and the personal derogation of those who dare to disagree. The influence of these various trends poses a threat to many of our nation's historic customs and moral commitment, both in government and in houses of worship. That says a lot about Jimmy Carter, does it not?
Yes, it does, because he was a man of faith, so it's not as if he was rejecting religion, but he was talking about being compassionate, about seeking compromise, and about being understanding of others who you disagree with or whose lifestyle you don't approve of. He was a strong supporter of human rights and of equality, and that drove many of his policies, both domestically as well as internationally. So that's a very revealing quote from him about his views about others, but also his views about religion, religion that should be flexible and should be humble and compassionate.
He mentioned, of course, the discussions and the reflection has been focusing on his years as president, but obviously he had a long life before then. When you look at his naval experience, he was one of the really, and when you get to it, a pioneer with the military nuclear efforts, and he had said that Captain Hyman Rickover, who's a legendary with military service, other than his parents, Carter says Rickover was one of his greatest influences in his life, with the dedication to duty and high standards, demands of who's serving under you. He learned a lot from Carter. Was always looking to learn, it seems.
Yes, he was, and his association with Admiral Rickover was, of course, instrumental, as you point out, in framing his character and his approach to life. He did believe in integrity and in honesty, and that defined his politics. He was sometimes viewed as naive because of that, but nonetheless, he believed that you should be truthful, you should have integrity, and you should not lie to the American people. You should be as transparent as possible. Now, of course, politics can get in the way, but nonetheless, if you take a look at his career, he really did try to be honest with the American people, and that carried through not just through his presidency, but also after his presidency and his post-presidency, where he focused on peace, on democracy, on public health, on conflict resolution, all of that because he believed in the integrity and the decency of all human beings.
Can that quest to be honest with the American people, did that come back to bite him in a way? I'm thinking maybe specifically of what's called the malaise speech from 1979.
Yes, it was. He talked about an American malaise and about the fact that America was down in the doldrums, and that did hurt him. I mean, he was speaking frankly about what he thought was the situation, and he wanted to revive the American spirit, and also he needed at that point in time also to revive the American economy. And many people blamed him for sort of being downbeaten about the United States. But he saw that really as a way to cure what he thought was sort of a down moment in American history and rouse the American public to do better. But of course, you know, what your intentions are and how it gets messaged across and received by an audience are very different. And so he got a lot of criticism for that speech. A lot of people expected the president to always be upbeat and always talk about how America was going to move on to bigger and better things. But the down spirit of that speech did hurt him because it didn't fit the image that many people had of the presidency.
When Carter became Georgia governor in 1971, one of his fence posts, one of his foundational cornerstones was civil rights. And that did not sit well with a lot of people, as one would expect, even at that point in Georgia, to where he hired blacks to serve in state government. He hung portraits of black Georgians, most foremost Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But, and certainly this wasn't planned by Carter, but that allegiance to civil rights actually in great part helped him win the election in 1976 by gaining the black vote, specifically in, I believe it was Wisconsin and Ohio. Without the black vote, Gerald Ford would have won re-election.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, he really did believe in human rights and in equality, and that was part of his civil rights approach. And he believed in that, and he carried that through not just in the campaign and attracting black voters. I mean, there was a lot of talk about a new South, because he came from Georgia, and about a new South and a new era in American politics, American civil rights politics. But he carried that forward when he became president. He is noted as the president that moved to significantly diversify the federal judiciary and make diversity a priority in picking judges. He appointed a record number of women, I think it was 41, to the federal bench, a record number of minorities also to the federal bench, something like 57 minority judges, and those numbers were more than all previous presidents combined. So it was not just talk, it was not just campaign talk, but he carried that forward in his appointments, both in the administration, but significantly in the judiciary. He really diversified the federal bench in ways that no other president before him had done.
Talking with Professor Alan Sanders, former senior reporter of Time Magazine, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, stpeters.edu, their website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Let's look back at the 1976 campaign, because it was Jimmy who. And instead of arching his back and being indignant about being dismissed, he actually played with that, played off it, and ran maybe what could be called a textbook campaign on how to answer that question.
Well, yes, and of course it was a different era in terms of primary elections. He basically went personally, you know, from state to state and campaigned rather personally in each of the primary states. And so he slowly built up momentum. But that's a different time than it is today, because the primaries were less bunched up in those days. Today, of course, they're very much bunched up. You've got Super Tuesday, and even all the other ones are bunched up. So you can't really carry on a state-by-state campaign as much as he did. You've got to approach it more as a national campaign. It's not clear to me that his campaign approach would be successful today, but certainly he understood what needed to be done back then, and he really capitalized on it. And the Jimmy Who thing was something that he also capitalized on. But he brought a very much of a personal campaign state by state and built up momentum in that way.
Found the stats. Carter had traveled over 50,000 miles, visiting 37 states, gave over 200 speeches before any other candidate had even entered the race.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he took it seriously. I mean, you know, he was a meticulous, very detail-oriented guy. We mentioned the fact that, you know, he worked under the wing of Admiral Rickover. He was a naval person. He was a nuclear knowledgeable person. I mean, he was brilliant, and he was an extremely meticulous president. That was his quality, of course, a good quality, but it also led to problems in administration because of his detail-oriented. Sometimes he focused on the details, but not enough on the broader picture. So it was both something that really helped him, but it was also something that hurt him at times.
Turning to his presidency, it's probably, like it or not, fair or not, it's always going to be defined by the Iran hostage crisis and Russia making the noise that they did, and invasion of Afghanistan. We go on from there. What if we focus on those ideas and the economy too? Because if you look statistically, Carter did not inherit a stellar economy from Gerald Ford. And of course, Ford was responding to the economic problems with, I don't know if you remember, the wind buttons, whip inflation now,
yeah.
Which, you know, that was a great slogan, but it's not much behind it. And Carter at first did improve the economic numbers. With inflation, got it down from around 9% to just under 6%, but that didn't last for a variety of reasons. But if we look at the economy and the Iranian hostage crisis, what are we overlooking that is meritorious of Carter's time in presidency.
Yeah, well, certainly the economy, the inflation and the stagflation hurt him, as well as the Iran hostage crisis, which lasted for 444 days. But his other accomplishments were significant. Sometimes get forgotten. But the big one, of course, was the Camp David Accords, in which Carter mediated an accord between Egypt and Israel that ultimately culminated into a treaty in 1979. That's a treaty that holds to this day. He also negotiated a new Panama Canal Treaty that transferred control of the canal from the United States to Panama. And very significantly, he normalized relations with China and established full diplomatic relations with China in 1979. And that's also something that has lasted to this day and a very important development in terms of world peace, having really formal relations, diplomatic relations with China. He also pursued human rights. I mean, throughout his presidency, he stood up for human rights and abuses in countries such as in Iran and South Africa and Argentina, and he was very vocal about that. So in terms of foreign policy, there are some very important achievements. Also, even the Iran hostage crisis, what many people forget is that he actually negotiated the release of those hostages. Now, the release didn't occur until President Reagan assumed office on January 20th. The Iranians held back the hostages basically to punish Carter. But nonetheless, the deal that led to the release of the hostages under President Reagan's watch were actually negotiated by Jimmy Carter and his administration. So although it was something that hurt him politically because it lasted 444 days, nonetheless, he resolved that problem and gave the win, if you want to call it that, to his successor, President Reagan.
Just to wrap up here, is it fair to say that Carter had a good presidency but a great post-presidency?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, he had successes. I mean, he wasn't reelected, so in that sense, it wasn't a great development for him. But he still had a good presidency. But the post-presidency is something that stands out. He is really the most accomplished post-president or former president that we've ever had in American history. He established the Carter Center, and that's a center that, under his watch, focused on peace, democracy, public health, conflict resolution. I mean, his center, and some of it he was involved himself, monitored over 110 elections in more than 40 countries to assure they were fair and democratic. He mediated personally disputes and negotiated peace agreements around the world in places like Ethiopia, North Korea, Haiti, Sudan. And, of course, he was a great promoter of health. The Carter Center made significant contributions to eradicate diseases, especially things like guinea worm disease and river blindness. And for that, he got for that work, that post-presidency work, he got the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002. We shouldn't also forget that part of his efforts was that he was an active volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, and we've seen many pictures of him and videos of him actively volunteering and helping build and renovate homes for low-income families. So all of that was unprecedented, and as I say, it culminated in his getting the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002, not for his presidency, really, but for all the work advancing humanity and advancing peace after he left office. So he was quite extraordinary in being really the best former president I think we ever had.
I want to close with this quote from Carter's 1975 book, Why Not the Best? I am a Southerner and an American. I am a farmer, an engineer, a father and husband, a Christian, a politician and former governor, a planner, a businessman, a nuclear physicist, a naval officer, a canoeist, and among other things, a lover of Bob Dylan songs and Dylan Thomas's poetry. So if you're still asking Jimmy who, Carter has given that answer many, many, many times over his wonderful 100 years of life and lessons that can be learned from that life as well. We've been joined with a former senior reporter from Time Magazine. Also, he's Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, stpeters.edu on the web. Professor Alan Sanders, thank you for your insight of the true life and history of what is one of our more educational, inspirational presidents and humans and Americans. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Chris. Take care.